Hey, welcome to the Bullpen Sessions. Patrick Lillis, glad you're here, glad you're listening. Excited to share this week's conversation with actor, director, producer, creator, my friend, Eden Marichaux. It's funny, Eden's somebody I wanted to talk to for a while, and I finally got motivated to do it because during the Super Bowl, you hear us talk about it. He's in a Super Bowl commercial, and then the next night, The Equalizer, he was on in a recurring role. And just seeing him pop up in high-profile places. And right before the pandemic, we talked about he was in Ink on Broadway with Manhattan Theater Club. And I feel a lot of that is generated from him making his own film. He made a feature film called Bruce that went on to win awards and do the festival circuit and get released in 25 cities, I think he said, different movie theaters, and just really, Eden is great. I mean, he just has this incredible energy and a sense of purpose, and you'll hear us talk about that. And, you know, I'm looking around as things are, you know, part of me's been thinking, like, since the pandemic, oh, what's going on with indie theater? What's happening? And I realize that a lot is happening. People are creating events, and you know, I'll let Eden talk about the value of what it did for him, but I'm seeing, you know, Kyan Douglas is doing a play down at the Flea, putting up her play, and that's great. I'm working on two productions. Adam Lin is doing Sped Kid in United Solo, his coming-of-age story, where it's funny, that's a coming-of-age story while he's also losing his sight at the age of 12, and I'm just, the story is fantastic, excited to be part of that. Leela, Sean LeClaire's show is going to be at New York Theater Lab, and he takes him, you know, he's putting up this, it's the journey, it's his journey and a spiritual journey while also bringing the audience on a journey. Adina Taubman is making a 3-day, you know, she just made a short film, just shot it for over 3 days, and, you know, I'm seeing all this work going up, you know, it's, and I was talking with Jake last episode about Jake Brash, about the benefit of putting up your work and then getting to another platform. And I'm really, really excited to see a lot of the work that people are doing that's getting out there and getting themselves seen as produced and getting their stories told and doing it with a real sense of commitment. And that's what Eden brings to the work, is just this dedication of engaging community to bring the work to life, but a sense of purpose and commitment to excellence. And, you know, I'm excited by it, and I'm love to see all of that work, because I think, as he says in our conversation, work begets work, and I think that's happening for all of these artists as well. Yeah, I'm really, really excited to share the conversation, and, you know, I jump in the middle of the conversation where I'm talking about why I finally reached out, because I got to see him and on this higher platform and get to hear about how that's coming about and happening for him. So I hope you enjoy the conversation. And with that, play ball. Do you notice that something's happened, that you're getting more elevated opportunities? Or is that just my perception from a distance?
Wow, that's a cool question. I think that, see, like, this is, it's good to get outside of people, outside of yourself, that, like, you care about and you trust to say things like that, I think. A friend of mine reached out yesterday and said, we both lost our parents in the last year, and she was just like, you know, as artists, you're always kind of moving the goalposts. And it's like, it's important to look back and to sometimes just throw the goalpost back a couple yards and say, like, oh yeah, dog, like, this is where you were and this is where you are now. And I think we're always conditioned. I'll speak about the country I'm from, and I love America. I think that one of our biggest faults is that we kind of always throw things to the side and are focused on the next thing. And that's not it's not helpful, and it's also kind of a form of mental illness, I think, just society wide.
Yeah.
Really long way of saying, like, I do. And I just thought about it yesterday. So it's funny you asked that question, kind of like looking back, and I'm like, oh, yeah, dude. And it's something I do, where, because the advantage that I have as an artist, I think, is that I had a completely different life where, you know, I was halfway through a pension. You know, my life was kind of mapped out, and then there was a choice to change. So I kind of like know what it's like to have a quote unquote real job. I know what it's like to be at a job that I love as an educator, as a teacher, you know, as a paraprofessional at the Board of Ed, but like going to lunch with my boy Wansel and like dreaming about what life could be like, you know, being in the city and walking past like one of those, what do you call honey wagons, the triple bangers, whatever they call them. And like you walk by it and you see names and you're just like, man, one day it could be possible. So I have that kind of perspective, which is helpful. But again, I still am an American, so I do kind of.
I like that idea. It's true, right? We all diminish. We all like, oh, I did that, so that's not impressive because I did it. What I really want to do is this other thing. You know? And it's what's next, what's next?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, I remember that dope one-man show you did.
Well, that one-man show is now turned into a film.
And really?
Yeah, I will. When we're not on the podcast, I will let you know that it's going to be up in Inwood in May.
Shot it?
Yeah. And I'll give you all the details, but we did it. And it's funny because I could just go right from there, right? I made this film, and part of the thing of you being on The Equalizer, you being on the Super Bowl, right before the pandemic, on making your Broadway debut. And I know that before that, 2 years before that, and I don't know when it started, but you know, making your own feature, Bruce, and you know, I want to talk about, you're one of the more self-motivated people I know. You know, you're driven and nothing's going to stop you. And we'll go back and talk about stepping out of teaching to do that. Mm-hmm. But what did making your feature film, what did it do for you internally? Like, what did it do for you as an artist, do you think?
What? Okay. Did a lot. My brother who passed recently, he was always mad at me for jumping back into acting. Cause he was like, yo man, your goal was I jumped back into acting so that I could meet like professional actors. My goal originally was like to jump back in, I'm gonna meet a bunch of like dope ass professional actors and I'm gonna make movies with them. Right? And then when I jumped back into it, I got to acting class, Bruce Ornstein's acting workshop. I remember how much I loved it. So I started to take that track of just like focusing on acting. And then I remember I started to book stuff. And then Shy said, he was like, you know what, Eden, you were right the whole time. Like, yeah, that was smart to do the acting thing. And as I look back on it, no, it's probably, we probably both were right. Because then it got to a point, you know, you go out, You know, you're a black guy in New York auditioning, especially at that time when I jumped back in. It's a lot of like two-dimensional parts. I'm from Brooklyn, so I'm authentically from Brooklyn. So when it comes to like doing different kind of parts, like I could do that authentically. And that was an issue for me because everybody I grew up with had 3, 4, 5 dimensions. So playing these kind of like two-dimensional parts, the idea of going back to my neighborhood and showing my face was not an option. So I guess I can tell you how I started Bruce, but basically what I wanted to say was that making Bruce reminded me of my own agency. And the idea, the thing about being an actor is that it's not like being a musician or any other artist. Like, I can't, you can't pick up your guitar.
Right.
You're walking with your instrument. I mean, yes, you can do vocal work, you can do all these things, but at the end of the day, it's like we're waiting for somebody to tell us it's okay, I pick you now. It's just a different thing. And it's just a recipe for disaster and depression. But what I discovered and rediscovered from making films again was just like, no, man, I choose when I do shit. Like I'm gonna do this. And it also makes me not worry about the other shit as much. It's just like, yeah, all right, I got an audition, I'll put it on tape, I got casted, but you know what? I'm putting myself in the parts I want to put myself in. Like, instead of me waiting for the two-dimensional part or settling on that, and we've all done things that, we're not the proudest of in the moment. We do the best we can when we do it. But that agency to say like, yo, man, I'm not only gonna make my stuff, I'm putting my people in my stuff because I know they're dope. And yeah. And then too, when you're dealing with casting directors, when you're dealing with anybody else in the industry, I'm not really one for networking. I don't like small talk. It kind of, and I know it's maybe off-putting to someone when I first meet them. My personality is like, yo, I want to get to know you. Like that's what I care about, but I
Right.
think with casting directors, with all these people, you make a short film, you make a feature, you invite them. Now you're on a different level. Now maybe they're thinking to themselves, oh, I could cast that person's next thing. It's just, again, what are you here to offer?
Yeah, and it does, right? It presents you. I mean, it's funny, I say this about playwrights too, about self-producing. I just had a great conversation, and it's like sometimes people need to see you as a producible person. Like, oh, there's Eden. He can carry a film. And now I can see that and I can think of him differently.
Such a good.
And it's sort of painful that it takes all that work to make that happen. But at the same time, what you said is it's empowering to do it, and you get to write the roles you're interested in playing, which is good. And when you talk, and I know you and I have talked about this a little bit, is you're like, oh, I don't like networking. Okay, let's take the word away. You love community
Yes, I very much.
because you brought that film, that one film. Everybody on the screen I knew because there were people in your community.
Yes, also people that you helped introduce me to.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was a circle, but it was a large circle. It was from different parts of it too, and I really appreciated that because I know we talked about another film where you're like, why didn't they cast this person who we both know? And it's like, right, it's community because that's networking. Networking is your friend. Like, how did that film get made?
Yeah, that's important.
And that film got made, right? Because your community showed up.
Dude, we had a production budget on that film of $2,500. It was nuts. I was like, I Sesa, my partner, I got her name right. Yeah, my baby and I, like, we, yeah, was just like, okay, we're not gonna pay rent this. We're gonna hold off on the rent this month and just use that money to make it, and then folks like Gene Pope, my man, came down, came along down the line and helped finish it. But yeah, that doesn't happen because it's like, yeah, it's $2,500 on the screen, but it's $500,000 of sweat equity from people that you love.
Right,
And
you made a feature and a full length feature, and then and so people show it. How long was your shoot?
what comes to mind is like 21 days. I think initially it was like 17 days or something like that. Maybe like 15 days, 15, 16 days. And then the rest of the days were like, we're editing stuff. We didn't get the last scene, so we needed the last scene. And it was just like, oh, like pickups, like, oh, we could use this to like bring the story together. And then people started, and that's the other thing too. When you start making stuff, because my people and I, we were still young on the journey of like trying to be quote unquote professional actors. And there's something about when you make stuff, like when you create your own opportunities, other opportunities come. It's like putting the water in the well. It's like putting the water in the pump to get the water out. It's like once that started to happen, all my friends started booking stuff. So it was hard to get everybody. Because the last scene didn't have all the characters in the film because I just couldn't wait anymore. I waited 9 months. People were overseas, people were on shows. I was just like, and that's the other part of it too, I think, as a creative. It's just like, one, it's not going to be perfect, and it's two, it's like fit, you gotta finish it. You gotta deliver the baby.
Isn't that interesting? That's the thing. People talk a lot about like perfect is the enemy of good, but I think perfect is the enemy of done.
I love that. I'm
Right?
stealing that.
Because if we keep waiting for it to be perfect, it's never gonna it, A, that's there's no such thing. It does not happen.
It would do, and I will take all the credit for that quote.
And
No, dude, you're right, dude. I completely agree, man. And it's just like I say this all the time, but perfect comes from the Latin perfectus. It means complete. It does not mean without flaw. So when you say perfect is the enemy of done, that makes perfect sense to me. And also, perfect means done.
it's done, right?
That's what it means,
Because that's what the piece is. And then, so also what you're saying is right, like work begets work. Like your people in your movie all of a sudden start getting work, you start getting opportunities. I'm gonna stick on Bruce for a little while because I think there's something that you did. I just made a film and I think about you a lot because I am getting it, trying to get it out into the world, right? And it's hard to get into festivals. It's not easy. And you did something that I thought was amazing when you took your film to Sundance and drove people around playing it in the van.
Yeah, that was wild.
I just want you to talk a little bit about the tenacity of doing that because I do know, you're not going to get into every festival. That's impossible. But you've made a product that you know is good.
Thanks,
And
man.
you need to share it with people. And just what was that experience like for you? Or what, I don't even want to say what drove you to do it, but while you were doing it, I keep asking because it's an internal thing, like what did it do for you?
That whole thing was wild. I always trust ideas when two people have the same thought at the same time. It's like when two people are thinking the same thing, or I get goosebumps, I always follow my goosebumps. Like I feel like intuition is like your best life lived coming back and saying, "Hey, bro, do this." You know what I mean? So like, I was in Lisa Lamartina, you know Lisa, right? Yeah, of course you do. I was in Lisa Lamartina's kitchen in Jersey with Sesa, and we were talking about ways to like promote Bruce. And we had the idea, I believe, like, just my memory is like, yo, we had the idea for the Bruce bus at the same time. And it was like, it was getting there, and then it was just like, yo, let's do this. And I was like, oh shit. So yeah, I mapped it out. I did, I was like, oh, we can get magnets. So I got these huge magnets that said Bruce and had the tagline of the film on the side of it. And then what did we do? We went to park, we got a ticket to Park City. Because Sundance is in Salt Lake City. We got a ticket to Park City. We rented a Sprinter van, a luxury Sprinter van with a 30-inch monitor in it. And then we picked the van up in Park City, and we drove to Salt Lake City. And on the way, Lisa's friend was out there, so we had the magnets delivered to her place. We put the magnets on the side of the van, and then we just drove all over Sundance. And I had been there before because I had been in a couple movies that screened at Sundance, which I was super grateful for. One was called White Girl, and the other one was called Tallulah. Anyway, so I knew that people needed to be driven from theater to theater. So I was like, yo, man, we get this van and then we show people the movie, the trailer or the film in the van. And yeah, man, it was great. Met a lot of people. We met a woman who produced one of Idris Elba's films that was out there. And he directed it, and she had given up her seat to get so people could watch the film. And as Sasa was outside, she invited them to come to the van. So they hopped in the van. We ended up like pulling into a gas station, and she watched the whole film. And so that was one relationship created, and it's like, for all that, if you just get that relationship, it's not a just get, but that's important. And also, people are seeing I'm just all over the place, Patrick. You said, what did it do for me? So what it did was, one was the exposure. A lot of people saw it. My man Alfonso Johnson, that you probably know, he said that when he went out there, like the next year or the year after that, like you weren't allowed to drive in certain places anymore. And I took pride in that. So
What did it do for you? I shut down Park City.
I was like, oh, maybe I have something to do with that. And the one thing about it was the reason why I did it. I was like, to your point, I was like, I think this is good enough. I've seen things at other festivals where I'm just like, you know what? All power to them. I'm not gonna say my film is better because it's all subjective, but you're not gonna tell me this film is better. You know what I mean? Like, you're not gonna tell me that. So I felt like it deserved to be there. So I was like, all right, so it's gonna be there. So we called it Crash Dance. And my man Mike made up a flyer for it. And then what we did was, as we were going around driving folks, I met my lawyer there for Bruce. That was super helpful. That represented like 14 or 15 films there. And I was going around giving out the flyer. And then there was like a QR code, or it was like a link. And you could watch the whole movie from a certain time to a certain time. Because I was like, oh yeah, I got my own film festival out here. As I'm saying it, it sounds so wild, man. Yeah, but we did that there, and then we went to South by Southwest as well. Met a bunch of people out there. Yeah, man. So I also learned a lot of things not to do with Bruce, which is super helpful moving forward. I think a lot of times people, this dude Jerry Lamothe made this film called More Infinity back in like the late '90s with like a early 2000s with the digital camera. He's from my neighborhood. I mean, I didn't know him, but I remember going, there was a movie theater on Flatbush and 7th. I remember seeing it and being completely inspired. And then I met him a few years later, and he was like, dude, let me tell you, the easiest thing to do is make the film. He was like, all the action starts after. He was 1,000% right. So in the back of my mind, I was prepared. Making a film is really fucking hard. The difference between making a short film and a feature film, they're different things, bro. Like, they're not even comparable. You can't even put them in the same category. So doing that, and then going, trying to be in cities and trying to promote your film and whatnot, can break you. So I think a lot of times people make a feature and they feel like, this is it. And you feel that thing, man, this is it. This is it for me. And then when it isn't it for you, or it doesn't go where you felt like it should go, it kind of breaks our will sometimes, or injures our will. And then we won't make another film. But the thing is, dude, make the next thing and take everything you learn from that and put it into this thing.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, going back to the beginning of our conversation, you don't know, sure, I'm gonna not say that Bruce fell short, because from my outside it did amazing, right? You got into festivals, you won awards, you got into regular movie theaters with
I
some
think
kind of movie, with where people who you didn't know bought tickets and ate popcorn and watched your movie. That's the dream, right?
so crazy.
And so that's amazing. And then you self-promoted at these different festival, high level festivals, and you can say, did it reach all your goals? I know what you're saying about people, because I'm experiencing it. I just finished a film and I'm like, I want it to exceed my dreams. I know the reality is not that, but the achievement, because nothing works. You don't hit one, you don't hit one basket and you're like, oh, I'm in the NBA. Like it's a process. And I think because now I'm looking at you going, I watched you last night before knowing I'm going to interview today. So I watched you on TV last night on an Equalizer. And what I know is interesting about that is my mom watched you because she watches that show every week. And I didn't have to say like, hey, my friend's on it, because she's just watching it. And I also saw, I see you regularly after the Super Bowl, but in the Super Bowl commercial. And I mentioned those two high profile things because I think they're cumulative from you taking your power and making Bruce. You taking your power and making a film, all of a sudden, these other things, like you said, you may dismiss the achievement or the or what it means at this moment of getting to the next level, but it's a next level of work. It is beyond. Doesn't I'm not judging better or worse, right? Not quality or anything like that. I'm just saying there's a level of professionalism and platform and awareness and number of people who see them. I mean, I pause on number of people who see them because the Super Bowl is the most watched television event ever, this year's Super Bowl.
That's right. Thanks, Taylor Swift. Dude, it was, yeah. That was crazy because like I've never gotten so many I got like 100 texts in like less than, it had to be 20 seconds. It was boop, 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 I was like, I didn't even know my phone could go that fast. It was crazy. And I was in Mexico City. So that was wild. Yeah, no, I hear you, and I just really just I'm trying my best to receive everything that that you're saying, 'cause you're also somebody that that really helped me specifically like early on, when I was trying to get into that lab intensive, man, the educational, was it, what was it called, the educational
I think it
no
was called. I think it was called the master class at the time.
master.
Yeah,
I remember that. I remember that.
then we gained humility.
No, it was freaking great, man. That was such a great program. I remember that interview with you and Dave Deblinger so vividly.
Me too. I remember at the time you were already selling your stuff.
Yeah, and you said to me, you were like, well, what do you need? I was thinking about that this morning. You was like, well, what do you need us for, Eden? Yeah. And I was just like, what? I was like, because I want to meet all of you guys that I kind of, that I had been, looking up to from afar. And I wanted to learn what it took.
I ask a practical question? This is not about the lab thing. It's actually about Hank and this Super Bowl commercial. Is did that happen because representation changed? Did you think it happened because something internal changed for you? Like, what do you think happened? What specifically happened to get to like your Broadway debut? That's a big deal.
How did it happen? I think I know what happened. I did a play directed by Steve Broadnax the third, who to me is like just the cream of the crop, like the best of the best. And we did a play, like he's really the best. Like we did a play called a Dominique Morisseau play that I love called Pipeline. And I love her and her stuff. We did a play at Actors Theater of Louisville. So to me, like that was like one of the big five like places, like regional places to play at. So when I got asked to do it, I was kind of like, oh shit, this is like that was a big jump for me. To me, the equity card was always going to be the hardest thing for some reason. I don't know what it was, but like that was it. Anyway, I had my card at that time, but I had when I went and I was surrounded by a bunch of people that are like lifelong friends now. It was a family, man. And I realized doing that during that show, I think we were watching like the SAG Awards or something, and I turned to one of my castmates, And I said, what we're doing right now is a Broadway level production. I was like, we're all close. I was like, yo, it's around the corner. Cause I was like, this shit that we're doing right here, I felt personally was the best iteration of that play. I was like, nobody's gonna do this play better than we're doing it. Right? So I was like, yo, this is a high level play with a high level director and high level actors. And we've all sacrificed our egos and everything to just be like, yo, yeah, I just felt like it won't get better than this. I felt very confidently about that. And then I put the audition on tape. It was an on-tape audition. They had been looking for the character for a long time. One of the characters I put on a Caribbean accent. Cause I was like, I know how those cats in London are. And I just had these two different, then I did like this RP accent for the other character because playing two roles. And I was just completely loose. Cause I felt like I was ready, I think,
Right.
in that moment. And I was like, I'm gonna do what the fuck I want. Like, and I don't care. Like, I was like, this is what I think it is. And I did it. And then I got notes immediately. They were like, do this, do that. I said, all right, bet. And then I went, then when I had the audition with David Katz in New York, they were like, well, wait for him to get back. So I get back and I do the audition. I go on there. You know, they were like, "Hey, let's switch it up. I want you to try to play this other character, dude." Patrick, I was so just like, "Man, whatever." I was so loose, dude. I was so loose, and my ego wasn't present. Like I wasn't. I was like, "Yo, I'm probably gonna make an ass of myself," because they were asking me to do accents and different things that I wasn't comfortable with. They were giving me sides for the first time, and I was like, "Dude, I've prepared for this. I know what this is like." And I was able to just release. And as it was going on, I was like, yo, they're throwing all this shit at me because I'm probably the guy they want. And they want to know if I play well with others and if I can handle pressure. And I realized, and it all came together in that moment. I was like, oh, that's what's happening here. Because they didn't know me from Adam, I didn't know David Katz and Kelly like that. They didn't know me. So it's not like relationships I've had with, like, other casting directors like Julie Schuber or Ross Myers or somebody like that, that I, like, I've been in a room with, but they didn't know. So they were testing me. And yeah, again, these are really long answers, but like that was, I knew when I was watching the SAG Awards and what we were doing on stage. So I think the universe kind of opened up. It was like, okay, he understands now.
Yeah, I think that's true that it does open up. And I also think that idea that you internally know that you're doing the level of work, and then what's, it's funny, I ask about the Broadway thing, and I think you correctly identified, like, no, the next level was Actors Theater of
Yeah.
Louisville, because that, and it is at the time, it's one of the top five places to work. And you're doing a play by a playwright you respect and love. And
Yes.
so all of a sudden you can see yourself at that level. So when the opportunity comes, you can play without ego. And also what I want to say that was great and true is they were testing you, but you didn't tense up or get resentful or any of
No.
those other things that can happen in your head. You went, oh, okay, well then I'll show them I can do it.
Dude, like that's a, I didn't even, like, it's funny, like, I didn't even think that was an option. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, the idea of like tensing or getting like resentful. Wow. But that, now that you said, I'm like, oh yeah, that could have been a viable option.
That
But
could
like,
have been, I mean, listen, it could, I only speak from where I would come from.
yeah, no, completely, completely.
Like, wait, you're testing me to know if I can direct? Like, I
Yeah.
don't want to direct, and there's, on my good day, I would do what you did in play, and on my worst day,
Because again, right, it's like it's a huge investment for them. It's a huge ensemble cast. We gotta know this guy can play well with others.
yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we don't have a lot of time. The director's coming from England, from London.
Well, I also think there's that great thing, it's funny, I know you study with at Maggie Flanagan,
We
and
did.
Maggie always talks about that idea that you're auditioning for your reputation and you're auditioning, you're not going to get this job, it's for the next job because they don't know you. And it's a huge financial investment. So not only are they testing you, can you play well with others? How are you in an ensemble? But this is a big money job, and we don't know this guy.
Yes.
And it's a risk no matter what, you know? And so they're trying to limit their risk.
Yeah,
And they
definitely.
wanted you.
Yeah, which is crazy. And then that was a wild thing too, because apparently they had been looking for the part for like 3 months. And I don't know if I saw a video, if I was on Zoom, or maybe I just imagined it. Oh, I remember, I think it was Kelly Gillespie. I'm not sure, but then she was just like, we had a big question mark on the wall for 3 months, and we were so happy that we could just like replace it with your headshot. I'm like, oh, that's dope.
That's dope. And it does go back to the idea of, you know, when you're auditioning, you're literally there to solve their problem. If you remember, and you
Yeah.
did, you know. Seems so basic because, and it's amazing that, you know, the Broadway and then the pandemic, blah, blah, blah. But when, do you find that you're getting into more opportunities? It feels that way because, as you said, your friends are texting you and people are seeing you and they're rooting for you. But do you feel like you're getting more opportunities? And is that because of different or new representation? Is that because of time? Is that because of you're creating them? What do you think?
I think it's a combination of all of it. A generic answer, but I think appropriate. Yeah, I think it's a combination of everything. I remember hearing Ron Cephas Jones. I might have overheard, God rest his soul. Just like one of the greatest, but like that dude was, yeah, man, he was a good dude, man. He really cared about like younger artists like coming up, man. And I don't know if it was, dude, I remember being at the intensive, the summer intensive. I think it was at Bard. And the day they like were gonna read pages, and it was like him. It was like Steve and stuff. Dude, I was overwhelmed, and I was just like trying not to be weird. Like desperately trying not to be weird, you know, which is really hard in those situations. But I remember I might have overheard him saying it. He was just like, as an artist, you gotta kind of go in like 10-year intervals. And kind of like the growth. And he was like, those 10 years come. And it's like, that's kind of wild to tell like a young person in the game, you know. I also heard Simon Cowell randomly say something about 20 years. You know, you got to be able to put 20 years in. And when you're starting, you know, that's really hard to hear. But once you get into it, and another lab cat, Chris Chalk, one of my really great friends, he also said it's a game of attrition. So the longer you stay in it, and I also started off older than most of the cats that I like came up with, right? Because like they're in their teens or early 20s, you know. I'm like 30 and above. Like I came into this when I remember another person I was in a lab thing with when I said I'm like applying to be an apprentice, you know, to be an assistant out there. She's like, Eden, you're 30. Well, I don't know. I might have been like 31 at the time. She's like, you're 31 years old. Some of these people are like, you're eight, what are you doing? I was like, yo, man, I want to learn, man. What are you talking about? I was like, yo, I'll print pages at 2 o'clock in the morning. Like, what are we talking about? Like, let's get it. I'll do whatever Christina Poe has to say. I love you, Christina. Yeah, man, so like I think it's all those things, all of them. And it really is just sticking it out. Because then when you hit 40 or 50, who's acting? All those cats usually are like famous. So who are they gonna get? They're gonna get somebody that's still sticking it out.
Yeah.
That's working on their craft, and they're going to be like the pot. And that was the one, people look at it as a disadvantage, but I looked at it as an advantage. I was like, okay, yeah, I'm a little bit older, but all the cats that were trying to act that were good, they quit. Most of them. Or the other one, like, have these high level jobs, quote unquote, you know, like, bro, come on, give it to me.
That's right. Either they've stopped playing the game or they're above a certain level.
Yeah. And
there's always opportunity if you're willing to stay and do the work. It's not always, it's very funny. I've also adapted this new phrase from somebody, you know, it's not easy, but it's simple.
Maggie Flanagan always said, I quote her all the time. She always said that. She's like, I'm not saying it's not hard, but it's simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, for me, I love watching Maggie teach. She's like the Yoda of acting teachers, but also just teaching, because she's so simple and so specific in what she does. But I'm not surprised that that's also her saying. I wouldn't be surprised if I borrowed it from her. Because it's not easy. Nobody's going to say being an artist is easy, but it's simple.
Yeah. You know what else is not easy? Doing some shit you don't fucking love to do. That's also not easy.
Right.
You know what's not easy? Regret is not easy. Regret is not easy. So, I always say this. There was this assistant principal that my best friend worked with. And he would always play the piano for assembly. And he was wanted to be a musician. And me and my boy Sean, we were making movies and doing things. And he was like, Sean, let me tell you, regret is all it's cracked up to be. Yo, dog, that stuck with that too. I get it. I get this shit is hard. I get that. You make no money for a really long time. It's like acting is the longest internship in America. There are all these things involved. You need money to subsist and survive. You need food. You need all these things. Dude, you also need to love something. You also need to have a purpose. If you feel like creating things is your purpose, like, your soul will never rest.
Can you talk about that a little bit for yourself? I was actually thinking about that before the conversation today. I was like, I think you're one of the people I know who finds purpose in your work. And, you know, like, you know, you talked early on about starting because of your student, Peanut, you know, and I know that I think you're making it. I read somewhere you're starting a new feature dedicated or inspired by your brother, right?
Yes.
And just how does that sense of purpose, how do you, obviously those are two very deep relationships that were lost, and that's inspiring, but the fact of carrying that sense of purpose with you, because I agree, when we have a sense of purpose, I feel like we're unstoppable. And you seem to always, even in not extreme situations, but you always are finding a purpose. Just running the workshop, and I don't want to get the name wrong, but Dream Big, you know, is like giving people a purpose. And just how do you hold on to that, and how do you keep that in the forefront for you? You just seem very, I mean, it could just be who you are, but if there's something about it, I'd love you to talk about it a little bit.
Well, I think I learned, I used to do a lot of like my early 20s, mid 20s, before I left the Board of Ed. So I get to like reading a lot of kind of like self-help, you know, books, a lot of my boy TR, Tony Robbins, Tony Robbins, my guy. Jack Canfield, like those dudes. And ladies, and yeah, man, for me, I really started to clock, like, I kind of learned a lot of it from like the Tony Robbins, like Unleash the Power Within stuff. But there is an anatomy of a dream. There are steps, very specific steps that you can take. And if you take those steps, again, going back to what you said, I'm not saying it's not hard, but it is simple. If you do these things, you will make what you want to happen happen. It might not be exactly how you want it to happen, but it'll be better than that. So for me, purpose was always a thing that stood out because it's like, how do people keep going? Right? And for me, it's always attached to the why. We always jump from like what we want to how we're going to get it. And you don't know the how until the journey is over. So you get caught up in the how, you're going to lose. You're going to stop. When I was at the Board of Ed, it was always like, yeah, I want to act, but you got to wake up at 5 o'clock to ride the bus with the kids. Then you get off the bus. Then these kids will wear you out. So you got to do this thing when you come home that we call the power nap. So I would take a nap for 2 hours. And then by the end, it's already 6:30. You can't audition anymore. You can't do anything. You know what? I'll think about it tomorrow. And then tomorrow is 6 months later or a year later, or in my case, 10 years later. Right? And the idea was like when you connect to the why, you become divinely possessed. Entheos, right? You become enthusiastic, divinely possessed. Like literally, whatever that thing is out there is put inside of you, and you're like, nothing is gonna stop me but being 6 feet under. And so when you have reasons to do the thing you're gonna do, right? A lot of times we don't investigate that. We're just like, I don't know why. I just want to be famous, you know? That shit could be problematic. As opposed to like, okay, like why do I really want to do this? Me personally, Eden Marichaux, as you can see what's behind me right now, E.T., right? The extraterrestrial. This is a foundational movie for me. I saw this movie, I think I was three, and I remember bawling. I wanted to get out of that theater, and by the end of it, I remember, and this happened to me when I saw the 20th anniversary. I was in there, and there were a bunch of kids sitting in that theater. In the beginning, they were crying. They were trying to get the fuck out of there. They were so like terrified of ET. And at the end, they were crying for a different reason because they loved him. And for me, like Richard Donner and Steven Spielberg, Robert Townsend, like cats like this, like they were making. If you look at the Goonies, you have Sloth, right? This character that you're completely terrified of, and in the end, you love him when he's like, "Hey, you guys!" And he comes down, you know, he comes down the sheet to save the day. It was like they were creating characters that allowed you to empathize. And for me, like that's everything to me. So I wanted to bring magic to my neighborhood. I was with like my really dear friend David Wilson Barnes, a fantastic actor and a better human. And we were watching E.T. a few months ago together. We had like an E.T. date. And we were watching it. And he's from that area on the West Coast. And he started to cry. And he was like, this is like a home movie to me. And it validated everything that I felt because I was like, I want to make things that are home movies for people that come from where I come from, and I want it to be about magic. So for me, like even talking about that, like when I talk about Peanut and losing her, or I talk about losing my brother, or I talk about all the people that I've loved and I've lost that are from where I'm from, it's like the idea to make something so that in their mind they feel like they're different options. Like, I'm connected to it right now as I'm talking to you. It's like I'm getting hyped. I'm like, yes, that's why I'm doing what I do. And if you have that thing, if it's something that I always make this kind of joke, I'm like, if you had to fight Darth Vader, and there was like a roach motel behind him, and like you're fighting for the lives of these million roaches, You would be like, nah, I'm good, Darth. Right? You'd be like, nah, I'm good, man. I'm gonna go back, you know, I'm gonna go back home, man. Please. I'm just like a Kool-Aid guy out of there. But if there's Darth Vader and behind him is your mom and your dad and your sister and your brother, everybody you fucking care about, dude, it's me or you. Because I'm already dead.
Right, if I don't have a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. And my purpose right now is to save those people behind you, Darth. So, like, one of us is gonna die. But know that I care about that more than you care about what you care about. And that's the other thing, too, man. Like, when you walk into these rooms, and I forget it sometimes, but when I tap into it, when I tap into, like, my kind of like Frederick Douglass, Harriet Tubman energy, and I walk into a place and I'm like, dude, I know who I am and I know my energy and I am in control of it. Everybody else's energy has to bow down. And I've had those moments, right? Like when I audition for Ink, or you know, making Bruce and winning awards, like these things, or simple things like, yeah, we can't give him this job this time, but we'll give him the next time. Like, yeah. So to me, purpose is you can't win without purpose. You're going to quit.
Yeah.
Right? It can't be a plan B. It's a cliche, but it's just, and the only way it's not gonna be a plan B is if you're dialed in to your purpose. And it doesn't have to be somebody dies. It could be small, any reason. Just fucking throw it in your backpack. This is another reason. That's another reason. That's another reason. And then you start to look at the world differently. And instead of thinking that everybody, like every time you go on an audition and like Jack Nicholson's next to you, you know, and fucking Samuel Jackson's over here. It's like I'm auditioning with these guys. You just look at the world differently. You look at the television, you're like, yo, there's a lot of shitty acting. I'm not hating. People might look at my stuff and be like, man, this guy fucking sucks. But yo, I'm out here and I'm about that life and I'm doing it. So there's that.
There is that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and I'm really glad you talked about purpose because it is, you are one of the people I know who is driven by purpose. And I agree with you because once that why goes away, the so does the drive. You know, all of a sudden obstacles become walls that you can't go through or over. And it's like, right, because you forgot why you're going through them.
Exactly. And I use that. I teach a video storytelling class at Pratt now. And I try to teach the anatomy of the dream through the anatomy of a character. And it's the idea, like when we think about a character, we're always talking about, okay, like what is the want? You know, what does this character want? And the older I get, I'm just like, that's not specific enough. There's not enough energy for that around it, right? It's like, what does this person need? Like a want. It's like, oh yeah, I'd love to have that. It's different from a need. I need to drink water, or my baby needs to drink water, or she's going to die. So it's like, what does the character want specifically? Like, what do they need? And also, why do they need it? Because it's always about intention and obstacle and stories. Right? But you need a big enough why. We were just watching Rocky the other day. He needs a big enough why to walk up that mountain, to walk up that obstacle. Right? He does not want to be a bum. He wants to prove that he's not just another bum from the neighborhood. And that's why that movie's so beautiful and that first act is so long. It's laying everything out for us, man. He does not, and he says it in that last monologue. He says, if I go the distance with Creed, I will know that I'm not just another bum for the neighborhood. And that is the other part, the American kind of thing of like winning and losing. And like winning and losing is not a thing, it's about growth. In that moment, he has grown. He's grown, right? And it's like, there's so many. I mean, I'm going down a rocky.
I could listen all day because I'm like, it's not about winning and losing. It's about doing.
Yes.
You know, and I think it's very funny. I've had this thing. The news is distressing me. So I wake up in the morning and like, I'm like 30 years ago, I'm watching the sports, you know, I watch Sports Center for 20 minutes to wake up in the morning. And the thing that drives me crazy, and I'll talk about it a little longer than I should, but the Super Bowl is happening. And they're like, what does it mean if Patrick Mahomes wins? What does it mean if Brock Purdy loses? And I want to just go like, fuck you. They're both in the Super Bowl. You know what it means? One of them is going to lose, guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
It means nothing. They're both incredible. They both got as far as you can get. They both, you know, are at the top of their game.
Dude, and assumption.
I can say historically one's better than the other, whatever. But what does it mean if they lose? What does it mean to the coach of you? It meant he got to the Super Bowl. Like, that's incredible. And when you talk about the Rocky, like if I go the distance, it's like, yeah, you do the work. Winning and losing out of our control.
Yeah. And again, like how much, right? Like how much does it matter? It goes back to that Teddy Roosevelt speech, man, the man in the arena, man. My boy Eric Kuhneman did it in our voice class, like, I don't know, it's over a decade ago now. And I remember being like, who the fuck said that? Who wrote that? What the like, it blew my mind. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It is. It is about the guys in the arena. It is about the women in the arena. And if you're going to talk shit about me, man, fuck, like, fuck you. Like, in the most loving way. Again, it's all, to your point, it's all like mentally ill stuff. It's like, when? What is that? I get it. When I play basketball, I want to win. I do.
Right. But even if you're, but my thing is, and it's funny, I learned this lesson. I will just date myself. In the 1976 Yankees playoffs against the Royals in the fifth game, the hero is Chris Chambliss because he hits the bottom of the ninth, he hits the home run in game five, and he wins. But 5'5" Freddie Patak, shortstop of the Royals, as long as the camera was on, he was in the dugout with his head down. And it's like, if Chambliss doesn't hit the home run, that guy's the MVP. And he's not, sometimes the hero doesn't win.
You know,
and we can't, and that's for storytelling in life. Like, it doesn't mean they weren't great. And I love having the conversation with you because it inspires me to remember these things because it's about the why and the effort. And, you know, and you can't, you know, it's great that I get to talk to you because you're on a Super Bowl commercial and the last time, you know, on stage was Broadway that I saw you. But it really is about, and the reason I've been wanting to reach out to you is because of the effort, is because of watching, I mean, always having this energy, but watching Bruce and then watching, yes, it got into some festivals. Yes, it won awards at some festivals, but watching your pursuit with that film of relentlessness of making it and then marketing it and thinking like, that's the drive that you have to have. Cause the purpose is you make it to share it, you know, and watching you do that was inspiring.
I appreciate that. It was funny about it.
What?
Say it was funny about Bruce because I almost turned down the Broadway gig because I had this whole like 2 week tour set up, like we were gonna go all over. It was like a month actually. We were gonna go all over the country, like because the film came out while I was in rehearsals. It was the craziest time. So the film went nationally into 25 cities in AMC theaters while I was in rehearsal for Inc. Yeah. So at first I was like, I don't know if I should do this because we got this tour coming up. And Sasa was like, Ida, are you fucking crazy? And then I think my manager, Stevie, was just like, Ida, what are you talking about right now? But I was kind of like, I just had my solid purpose. And I was like, this was the plan. It was smart for me to do
It was smart for you to do it. But when you think about it, what What advice would you give? I
To
also,
like
one thing that I heard while you, I mean, you may have already thought about it, but one thing I heard is that idea that we're in it for the long run and not to lose track of that.
I think yeah, man, you're choosing to die for this thing. So if you're choosing to die for this thing, hopefully you're here for a long time. Because the thing is, and people like kind of like, well, die for it. It's like, yeah, man, all you got is time. Like for you, Patrick, like how many hours of your life you spent in a fucking black box theater with no ventilation? Right?
Too long.
Like a lot. So I'm like, yo, you're choosing to die for this thing. Live for it, yes, but also to die for it. So like, yeah, stick it out. You don't know when your number's gonna be called, but the longer you stick it out, the best chance you have of your number being called. And if you give whatever you can give to it, it will give back. It will. I do think you're right. I think that is it. It's just like, yo, man, stick it out. The other thing is, like, you're gonna come up with a lot of people that you love, people that you feel meh about, and somebody's gonna book a guest star and you haven't booked a co-star yet. And then somebody, you're gonna book a guest star and then they're gonna get a series regular. And then you're gonna be like jealous or envious, but you have to take the fucking 50,000 foot look of it and just say like, dude, that's how this goes. Everybody's leapfrogging and doing all of this shit, and it doesn't matter. Like, yo, your time will come. And if you feel, to me, there's a difference between envy and jealousy. Like, envious is a dark space for me. Jealousy can be cool because it's just like, oh, wait a minute. Why do I feel this way? Oh, that means I'm not doing something. So for me, like that's what the jealous, when I feel the feelings of jealousy, it's like, wait, I love this person. Oh yeah, I'm not doing something. Because when I am doing something and when I am going after something, I feel nothing but love. So for me, it's helpful and it's like, oh, that's a marker. Like, okay, dog, let's go. You got it. Just get back at it. That's what this feeling is. So I kind of like renamed what jealousy is and kind of for me, like in my spirit.
Thank you, Eden. Thank you for that conversation. It's inspiring and invigorating to get to talk to him. And you know, he talks about bringing your best and that commitment. I love that he talks about the commitment to the craft, just that you are to staying in the game. And so I mentioned staying in the game. I also liked that in the middle of that conversation with Eden, I get to share my sports passion and how I connect that to theater. And the Freddie Pottek story is one that's true and really taught me about theater, actually. And as I shared, and also you're in it. You're in it. There's no winning. There's no losing. You're doing, and that is really, really key. And so much that he talked about is great. The idea of creating it, and also when he talked about being an actress, Theater of Louisville, just that idea of seeing yourself internally at a higher level or at the level you want to be at. And I think there's so much to that. Being at that level internally, that shift is what makes it possible for the work to happen at the next stage or the next place you want to be. I want to throw out, I forgot to mention this at the beginning, a congratulations. Jake Brash, awarded by the Kennedy Center, the Paula Vogel Playwriting Award. And that happened since we talked a couple of weeks ago, and that's thrilled for that. Dipti Brahmankar's Conjuring the King is getting incredible reviews in Miami. If you're down in Florida, near Miami, Southern Florida, check it out. That's going really well. And I mentioned a couple of shows, you know, the Adam Lind Sped Kid is United Solo, and Leela, Sean's play, he was nice enough to offer the farm community highly discounted tickets. If you just, when you go to buy those tickets, type in The Farm, all caps, And I think it's more than half off. And I would love to see, that's not till May 2nd to the 5th, but hoping you'll come out and check it out because I think he's doing something really interesting. And as I always say, tell us what you're doing because I'd love to promote it. Sean's play is at Theater Lab NYC, May 2nd to 5th. Adam's play is April 5th at Theater Row. And well, that is it that I can remember that's going on at the moment. But really, really appreciate the conversation, Eden, and thrilled for your success and a motivation. We talked about purpose. I mean, he is driven for the why he does the work. And I think it was just a, it inspired me. It was a great conversation. If the why is present, we will find a way to get it done because it's important. And he models that every day. And yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And with that, we're out.